and known for many years as a blind PFK researcher specializing in intelligence agency involvement in multiple assassinations, propaganda, and other global criminal operations in the 20th and 21st centuries.
Your listeners are extremely fortunate to have you.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media.
Chuck O'Kelly!
As I speak, it is the 29th day of May, 2021, allegedly according to that thing we call a calendar, and this indeed is the show you were looking for, but we are broadcasting on an odd day because for several years I have not done this on a Saturday night, but here we are, 8 p.m. Eastern, just a little bit after, actually I started late, but just a little bit after 8 p.m. Eastern time here on what they used to call America and the East Coast of it. And we are doing a special show. It is part two of the psilocybin discussion. And I am joined by Captain Trips, who is going to have a lot more input, I think, because I got myself a little tied in knots in the first one, explaining the why it was necessary in my mind. But you might hear a little more of the why as we go into the what happened tonight and the results, the aftermath, the after effect, if you will, of what was done and what has happened. And a special caller will join us in the second hour to assist with observations that only she could have. So that's the way that is. Anyway, Captain Trips, first
yes,
off,
sir.
How you doing, man?
Oh, I'm still hanging in there. How about yourself?
Yeah, me too. It's been a weird time. You know, it's been a long, strange trip, man.
Yeah, it has.
And
feels like it's coming to a climax, though. I think that's what's laying so heavily on my mind.
See, but is it? Anyway, I don't know. I really don't know at this point. There's a lot of things I just don't know anymore. I got to tell you.
Yeah.
I mean, I try to have arguments about things that I don't even want to have arguments about because I don't even want to discuss the things with people that are going on that they're parroting and so on and so mm-hmm. forth. And it hurts my head and it's all the way around. But look, that's not the discussion for tonight. Tonight, we're going to get into what actually happened when I partook of psilocybin. And again, I probably would have gone broke, number one, but number two, had greater difficulty acquiring things if it were not for the generosity of certain people. And I know some of them will hear this. And, you know, there was a handful of people who gifted me the medicine that I needed. And I can't explain to you how much you preserved my life for I don't know how much time, but I guarantee you, as explained in part one, and maybe I didn't say this, but I literally, you know, I'm not trying to be hyperbolic when I say this. I really felt like I was shutting down, like I was dying inside, man. And I'm not accustomed to that. But that's the direction I was going in, and you definitely made it so that that's no longer the case. Spoiler alert for the third part of this. But anyway, let's get into the mechanics of this. And two things. Number one, there is no endorsement by Captain Trips here. Even if you know exactly who he is by name, it wouldn't matter. He's not endorsing what I did. He's exploring this with me. He's not encouraging it as prescribed the way that I did. And I'm not even giving you the prescription. You get it? I'm not encouraging you to do this either. I'm not suggesting this. I'm just telling you my story, number one. Number two, the observations that I'm going to provide to you tonight are not going to be scientific. I'm going to describe my experiences. And my experiences might not have been fully connected to reality, I got to tell you. But I do know that they were connected to reality because they had results in my regular day-to-day reality. So, fact is, some of the things I'm going to describe is just my best effort to explain what I'm sure was going on chemically, what I'm sure was going on psychologically, but it's going to get strange, guys. And I'm sure somebody's going to use this against me at some point, but to hell with them. It is what it was. It is what it is. So anyway.
As long as you don't tell anybody to drink bleach, I think we're good.
No, but that's the thing is I won't suggest to anybody to do anything I've ever done. I mean, seriously, even the stuff that I've done, I don't suggest, you know, that isn't illegal, difficult to explain or anything else. I still don't suggest you follow my path. I ask the questions. I have a psychology here where I'd like to see progress made in certain directions. And you know what? I'm not telling anybody to do anything. I'm just explaining my point of view and the way I see things, the information I've been able to gather, no matter what the subject is. And here we go again, quite frankly. This is weird because, again, I'm going to describe stuff here that I know is not scientifically verifiable, may sound fully insane. So prepare to hear some insanity come out of my mouth, which is not normal. But look, I got to describe it best I can, and that's going to involve some things that are going to sound maybe ludicrous, maybe exaggerated, maybe fanciful, maybe like I'm trying to make them up. But to be honest with you, I couldn't make this up and tell it with a straight face. So anyway, Captain Trips does not know much about this experience I had. So I'm going to first start with you and ask you if you have any questions, because, like I said, we've already established the why. Mm-hmm. And now we're going to get into the experience in and of itself. So I'm wondering if you have any questions that you need to know in advance so we go forward. And
I don't think so. Kind of baseline stuff. Was your, you know, can you, were you in a fairly calm mood before you started? You know, that sort of thing, because, you know, that would certainly impact, I think, the experience. So just, you know, just little things like that. But no, otherwise, I'm all ears, because, yes, I do not know the details of that he's about to go into either. So I'm looking forward.
Okay. Well, you know, it's kind of unfair to say what was my state of mind, because I've done this several times now. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to say, and here's the thing, I've kind of lost track of the number, which is unusual for me, but I think it's around 10 times.
Well, I think going into the first time, because, you know, you're into a cycle now, you're having the positive changes in your life that you needed. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, going into it the first time, you didn't know what to expect either, you know, during or after the experience. So, you know, after you, you know, at this point, I think you probably have a better understanding of what you're going into and what it's going to be like when you come out of it. Right. So you're probably more calm going into it.
Yeah, that's true. And to be frank with you, even though, you know, I measure things by weight and this and that, and again, I'm not giving out a formula here. Frankly, there are different strengths to these things. It does vary. So it's not like every magic mushroom is the same.
Right.
But let's talk about the initial experience and, well, maybe a little background too. I have tried to utilize these things before, but just to have fun a long time ago. And they didn't do much in my mind. I don't remember them ever doing much at all, matter of fact, but who knows, because I dumped them down my throat with other substances and it just didn't seem to have any other, it was like it didn't do anything. I just got, you know, I was clearly drunk and this and that. Where I'd mix substances is what I used to do as a teenager, as a young adult. I was literally at one point at the age of like say 12 and 13, other kids that would steal drugs and stuff would give me combinations of them just to see what would happen, because they knew I had a good tolerance and they wanted to make sure, you know, bad stuff happened. Like, here, you could test it out. So they gave me stolen meds and, you know, we think we found cocaine, you know, stuff like this. And they would bring it to me and be like, let's see what happens to Chuck if he does it. Yeah, seriously. You know, and a couple of times I had to tell him, yeah, you don't want to take this because this is kind of a bad experience. One of the things that I did at one point for those older teenagers and got into the business of was to get blotters. And we used to get blotter acid from a spot in New York that was not far from Madison Square Garden.
Okay.
And so you could get on the train, go up there, go pick it up, bring it back, and used to get like a sheet of perforated hits that, mm-hmm. you know, was in a sheet of 100, 10 by 10. And we'd pay like $100 for these, bring them back home, and we could charge $3 a piece.
Mm.
And, you know, it was a way to make money, but of course, you got to sample the product to know what you're selling.
Of course.
You know, and I tried taking a few of these things and had them do nothing. And then when I did finally, you know, take like a strip of 10, and you know what, if I could get something to happen, it was horrible. I absolutely have never had a good experience with LSD.
Mm-hmm.
And to my mind, there is a difference. I know people say, no, that's there's no difference. There is a difference, especially mm-hmm. with this stuff that's, you know, somebody's making in a sink somewhere because they're smart enough yeah. to do it. You know, for instance, there's no rat poison in magic mushrooms. And a lot of people don't know that that's one of the elements that goes into the blotter acid, or at least used to. I don't know if it still does.
I don't know, but yeah, I know it used to.
No, but I'm just saying, so there's a level of that. I mean, it's not a lot. It's not, you know, usually enough to kill anybody. But the thing is, it usually actually, if you get an excessive level of it, it'll give you like little seizure type activity. So when I would take, you know, a handful of these things, and you're supposed to put them under your tongue, hang on to it for a little while. Everybody's got their methodologies, right? And the best I could do is get a seizure and a nasty experience out of it.
Oh, God.
So I didn't enjoy it. I had tried it several times to see, you know, well, this one's different. No, not really. And I had horrible, nightmarish experiences. Now, in fairness, you know, almost every time I sleep, I have some sort of nightmare, or at least that used to be the case for many years anyway. So nightmare awake, nightmare sleep, whatever. You know, it wasn't bothersome, but I didn't feel as though it was productive or even fun. And I remember trying the mushrooms and thinking, well, these don't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
So going into this the first time, now modern times, I'm an adult and no longer a child experimenting. Fact is that it was like, well, let's just see what happens. And I took an amount that, to the best of my understanding, would be good enough for, like, say, 2-3 people to party, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I got next to nothing out of it. Now, why do I say next to nothing? First of all the, you know, color trails and pretty flashes and stuff like that, because of my weird light sensitivity,
mm-hmm.
I have that stuff all the time anyway. And I know that's hard to describe. It's muted. It's not, like, super bright, but, you know, little color trails, the fact that... I mean, I've told you that the color white in and of itself breaks down into a rainbow in motion, for me anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually becomes a nuisance, gives me a headache, the color white, if I'm,
I can imagine. It would drive me crazy.
But, you know, for some people, that might be, oh, that's cool, that's like a trippy experience, and... Mm-hmm. Another thing is like little trails you see coming off of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I see that all the time anyway, because my eyes, the way they work, it doesn't keep up speed wise. I don't have regular focus. So honestly, something moving around always has trails coming off of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how to describe that, but it was just like, okay, so I got a little more of an intensity on that kind of, like, visual field distortion stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I did feel, you know, a little relaxed. And then I also felt a little hypersensitivity to my senses, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't profound. It was like, oh, well.
You know, and I almost wonder, and I don't know this, but I almost wonder if... And I'd really have to look into, you know, to the actual, you know, pharmacodynamics of it and how long, you know, what the half-life is. But I almost wonder if, it almost, you know, your first one or two experiences, you almost get like a priming effect. You know, you haven't quite hit the concentration that you need to get you into the real effect of the substance.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, the first, you know, I've heard this story, and I remember myself, you know, the very first time I smoked marijuana or smoked pot, I was like, oh, this is lousy. I feel nothing. And the second time it was a little bit different until finally you get the full effect. So I wonder if there's some of that going on.
Yeah, you know, I thought that as well. I also considered the idea, you know, especially after the first experience, I said to myself, maybe the problem is that I do have some damages, and maybe not all the receptors that need to be picking this up are picking it up in my brain.
Yeah, that's another good thought.
You know, but I wasn't sure, and look, it wasn't a negative experience.
Right.
And you asked about my mindset going in. You know, as I said, my mindset in the first episode, I explained, my mindset was, I don't really care what happens. I have to change something here. And look, if somebody said, well, there's a good chance you could die doing this, I still would have went forward with it because I just, you know, or if somebody said, well, your brain, you know, the old typical, you could destroy
your brain,
you know, fine. You know, was my basic response to that. It's like, okay, sure. If that's what it takes, that's what it takes. So that was my attitude about it was pretty like, well, I'm a little older, so, you know, I asked Kim to make sure my heart rate didn't go crazy, you know, and things like this, because I don't know. I don't know. And I was going in with an open, like, I don't know what this is going to do. So I'll just do it anyway, and let's see where it goes.
I mean, there was probably some hope in there too. You know, since you were doing it for a specific goal. You know, you weren't just experimenting; you had a specific goal. So,
right.
You know,
so,
you were hopeful that it was going to work.
Right. So in my mind, I'm saying, all right, this, and also, I guess this would be relevant to mention. Is I saw that there were people that with one or two large doses felt as though they were therapeutically good, that was it. Like that took care of. I mean, I can't tell you that you know, actually watching the transition between legitimate rape trauma to I'm okay.
Right.
That's what stood out.
That's
to me.
Fascinating.
Is I said that like is magic. That's all there is to that. Like that to me is unimaginable. So I went in with the hope that perhaps I could experience something like that.
Right.
You know, where I can do this once or twice, and I knew that also along with this is supposed to be talk therapy, according to the stuff I read, and I said, well, you know, there's problems there because, you know, I've got an odd history there with trust and everything. Like, I'm one of these people who, you know, they attempted hypnosis with me. And even when I thought I was being a willing participant, it did not work properly.
Right.
But I was also able to self-hypnotize at certain points. And I mean, and I could do some weird things. When they tried to therapeutically, like, teach me about, you know, hypnosis and relaxation and stuff like that, when I was institutionalized in these group therapy sessions with adults, within two sessions of them forcing me to go to those, I was the patient leading the class. And yeah, I, it sounds funny, but as a teenager, I could do things like literally shut down my pain centers if I wanted to in certain parts of my body. Can't do it in my head, which is a weird thing.
That's interesting, yeah.
But in my limbs and in a lot of other places, I can temporarily shut it down. And over the years, I can't shut it down in my back and my neck anymore. So my spine, my head to my spine is impossible for me to shut down the pain problems. But there was a point in time when you could literally, like, you know, do the test to prick me with a needle and I wouldn't budge because I literally didn't feel it.
You can still do that in some in some parts?
Yeah.
Body parts?
In some parts of my body, I can do stuff like that. I can, you know, I by the way, needles a bad example because I have a fear of needles.
Are you one of these inked up guys that are afraid of needles?
Well, no, but see, me getting a tattoo, I almost pass out every time.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah. And I'm an inked up guy who's afraid of needles. Yeah, okay. But, you know.
I'm just teasing.
No, it's okay. I could link trauma to exactly why I'm afraid of the needles, if you like. You know, my an interesting fellow who was part of my life decided to teach me not to be afraid of needles. And what he did is hold out my arms and stick me over and over again with a syringe. And there, now you're not afraid, right? No, look, nothing's wrong. So that didn't help. Anyways, you know, the stick pin attached to a syringe is a seriously nasty trigger point to me. Yes, I know how to give an injection. I can pull myself together to do one.
Right.
But I have never been, I could not inject myself.
That makes perfect sense.
You know, like if you needed me to inject you with something, I could do it properly. I could do the intramuscular or tap a vein, no problem. Mm-hmm. But if I had to, I can stitch myself, and I can't stick a needle in myself. You understand?
Really? I've never tried to stitch myself. I have put an IV in myself before, so I guess I've drawn my own blood before. So I guess I can do it. It wasn't the best thing, you know, best experience, but
Certain
circumstances, it's better than nothing.
Yeah, years ago, I don't know if they still do this, but even when they teach you phlebotomy, a lot of times they got you sticking a partner of yours in the class to draw blood.
They've gotten away from a lot of that.
Yeah, well, see, I could not do that, but I know years ago that's something that they used to do. And I've gone through all those texts. I've gone through many medical textbooks. Anyways, a lot of my information is probably dated. I understand, but anyhow,
anatomy is not dated. If you know, physiology is a little, you know, that improves. But if you have any type of anatomy from the last 100 years, that, you know, nothing's really changed.
Oh, I know. Solidly, that's exactly right. You know, if you have to deal with basically battlefield medicine, you've gotten it in the past 100 years, you're fine.
Yep.
No problem.
That's not going to change.
So anyway, back to this. Yeah, I had no problem. No, listen, we're gonna go in many directions here. So going into this experience, I got to tell you, first of all, there wasn't much that happened the first night. So you know, my response was, well, you know, again, they tell you this is addict behavior, but this is also the behavior of somebody who is aware of the fact that they have a higher tolerance.
Yeah.
So I go 10-1, honestly. So I had three times what I thought, you know, would be something somebody could have a party with. And then I went 30 times what I thought somebody could have a party with. Anyway, not giving any more clues about the math, but
mushrooms for dinner.
Yeah, pretty much. So I'm not even going to talk about how I prepared them or consumed them, to be honest with you, because I did it a couple different ways. You know, thinking maybe my preparation was bad the first. I mean, there was a whole bunch of like, let me see what I did wrong here, because
yeah, of course,
it was, you know, an interesting sensation, but was not profound. Did not give me, you know, a lot of people gave me the whole, you're gonna meet yourself, you know.
I wonder too if some of that just kind of gets back to my last thought with the progressive. You know, the progressive, I hate that word anymore, but you know what I mean, nature of something like this, as you get further into it. And, you know, I think, you know, just in talking to you in our off-air conversations, you know, the therapeutic benefit to you is unmistakable. So as you, you know, if you get yourself to a point where you've done the healing that you need to do and you continue to experiment with them, I wonder if that's when you're getting into that next stage of, you know, meeting yourself, so to speak, or, you know, seeing the divine. I've heard many different many different ways to explain it, but I wonder, you know, as you heal, as you heal what you went into this to heal, then you could probably, you know, maybe step to the next level.
Well,
if that makes any sense.
You see, that's the thing, is to me that's all. That is what the thing is. I want to repair what is damaged. This is what is in my mind. And again, the physical damage wasn't what I was considering. It was more about the psychological and emotional damage, and really the PTSD major focus, because that was just unbearable.
Right.
And you're right. There is a progression here. And here's the thing. I wouldn't say that I had an experience like anybody else. The majority of it, just in a generality here, was fairly unpleasant. And there were physical sensations that were unpleasant. And do you meet yourself? Well, you know what? You got a little bit of trouble meeting yourself if you have to reckon with the fact that you're kind of compartmentalized as an individual to begin with. And I am compartmentalized. Yeah.
You couldn't have survived this far and this well if you weren't. You know, that's a defense mechanism right there.
Well,
that, you know, your brain does.
Yeah, and let me try and lay this out. Now, this may be unfair to the process, but
you don't have to go further. We can move on to something else with that.
Well, no, this I think is necessary because look, you can't. This again is my perspective. Okay, so all going to sound crazy, but let's get to it. And it's not very scientific, and probably a psychologist would tear apart what I'm going to say. But this is reality according to me. I have had to be more than one person in my life. I have definitely had to, at certain points, defend myself. I have had to, at certain points, absorb things. And quite frankly, I mean, it's not quite a split personality.
Right.
But there are different switches that need to be flipped for me to be able to handle certain things.
Sure, sure.
And
I can just in my own, you know, my own life, I can, you know, be doing what I do. In a sense, it's certainly not apples to apples in cases, but I think the mental process might be the same. You know, I have to certainly in so many situations step out of it. Because, you know, some of the stuff you were exposed to is very traumatic.
Right.
So you have to be able to just, as you said, you know, flip the switch and say, okay, now, you know, some people call it, you know, that clinical mode. You shut off the emotion and you're just looking at the facts kind of thing. So, right. My point was, is I know exactly what you mean.
Well, there are certain instances where, look, your emotion is going to do you no favors is what it is. So you may have to shut it down. And you may also have to adopt a different attitude, a different way of thinking. And because I feel as though I had to live in different worlds, simultaneously, this developed into almost whole other people, where I basically nearly got multiple personalities. I mean, It's not as though I'm, you know, completely split where, you know, well, you know, now Jim is here to take over. But in a way, that kind of did happen. And at the same time, it's not necessarily about what takes over. But, I mean, there was a certain point, as I tried to tell you at the end of the last episode, that I pretty much had to put childhood aside. But it doesn't mean that those emotions didn't still exist in me. It doesn't mean that thought process didn't exist in me. Mm-hmm. It's just that I had to shut it down. I had to put it away.
Right. Yeah.
You can't
and
do
that's,
that.
And that's classic. That's classic setup for PTSD. You know, just put it in the old, you know, in the old, you know, shell. You know, when they used to call it shell shock from people coming back from, you know, World War I and II. You know, so that's what they had to do. They had to, whatever it was that they were exposed to that caused them such trauma, they had to, you know, put it somewhere else to be able to function. Mm-hmm. And it would be the exact same thing with you.
Well, right. But again, you also need functionality at the time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just because you're in a situation where you should be terrified, well, that doesn't help. You know, setting up, if you can rationally deal with something and deal with it, like you were saying, from the clinical point of view, mm-hmm. You know, you just deal with it. And sometimes that allows you to, you know, frankly, not to just survive terrible things, but maybe do terrible things in order to survive as well.
Mm-hmm. You can be the hero or the villain in that, and anybody can do it.
Well, that's the thing. And when this is sort of impressed upon you and becomes a constant for a while, this can sort of grow. So. So that's one issue that comes up here. And quite frankly, the whole idea about meeting yourself, well, kind of did that.
Yeah.
And I would say that I met myself, but recognized that I was fractured. Is, mm-hmm. you know, not completely broken into separate pieces, but certainly fractured.
Right.
Internally. And this is all psychology that I was seeing, and I could visualize this, not in the first session, but around, I would say, the third time in. Mm-hmm. This is when I could recognize this. And I recognized that I had a set of rules that were kind of in my own mind, in my own brain, so to speak, that that I didn't, you know, you don't really think about it this way normally.
Right.
But I started to see it from that perspective, is that there's a set of rules here and I can rewrite them.
Mm-hmm.
I know that sounds a little convoluted, but I'm telling you that's how I interpret it.
To me it doesn't sound convoluted at all. It makes perfect sense.
So you have that going on. But then let's flip to the physical side of this. Because I felt what I would call sensations I don't know how to describe, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
I do not know what to call them. I, like, literally, it's like, well, is it good? Is it bad?
Right.
Mostly not good. But different sensations where... all I could really grasp was that something was happening in my head, mm-hmm. that would be positive eventually, but was going to be unpleasant.
Right.
And this is all of these situations after the first second, maybe. You know, the remaining eight here is this has happened every time.
Interesting.
Some of those sensations, I'll be honest with you, feel as though, and I have been. Shocked electrically before. Some of it was like a electrical shock in my head. Some of it gave me some very serious headaches. These were accompanied by significant, really, really hard to control outbursts of emotion. And I feel like, now again, no scientific basis for this, but I feel like there were parts of my brain, literally, that probably had not been used or had been on, you know, low power for quite some time,
mm-hmm.
that were being charged up, like, you know, being hit.
I can tell you, you know, psilocybin specifically, it works deep in the brain. You're down into the prefrontal cortex and the amygdala, and that's where that's working. Which is, you know, that's exactly the part of the brain that, you know, that's exactly the part of the brain that functions in PTSD and schizophrenia and a lot of these syndromes, whatever you want to call them. So yeah, I mean, that makes perfect sense the way you're describing it.
So, and I do say some of it was pain.
I can believe it.
But some of it was not pain, and at a certain point, a couple of times in, I really started to remember things I had not thought about for a long time. Memory started kicking in that was. Sort of, you know, gray and dingy, and became extremely vivid.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't just memory, by the way, but emotion, which I cannot normally even access.
Mm-hmm. Did you feel like you were physically re-experiencing these memories?
Some things.
Or, you know, like mentally?
Some like things, when you, yeah. Some things were like, they became very fresh. You know, to the way that I interpret them. And some things, literally, it was like, when I say I was compartmentalized, I'll describe it this way. This is the best I could do when Kim asked me afterwards about this. Is, you know, imagine my mind is a small dwelling, a house, apartment, and it's got a few rooms in it. And normally I can't, normally there's a lot of closed doors and I function in a certain space. And sometimes we open a different door and now I function in a slightly different space. This sort of gave me the idea that that was going on.
Interesting.
Because, I'm aware that I'm able to shift my personality around, honestly. And I'm aware of what I do and I adapt. I literally take on other people's speech patterns sometimes and do all kinds of things to accommodate, blend in. You know, this is just part of my normal behavior. I do a lot of that stuff. There's certain, like, open parts of my personality. And then, quite frankly, there's a whole other realm of behavior which I've had to put aside. And it's really two levels of behavior which I've had to put aside. You know, one of it would be the child, so to speak.
Right.
And I really didn't have most of my childhood, right?
Well, that's exactly what I was going to say. It's the child looking for his childhood.
So but you know, I got to lock him behind a door and keep him there. And that's right. Where he's been. There's another side of me, too, that is not philosophically or emotionally connected to the guy you generally know.
Okay.
And what he is rather necessary because if, you know, in general, as you speak to me right now, I am not a particularly violent man. I am not an aggressive man. You know, I can be intense a little bit. But violence, aggression, the ability to seek and in a predatory fashion take advantage of a situation, that is another compartment. Doesn't necessarily share the moral ethos you might think of as associated to me.
That makes sense. I mean, that was the personality that did what it needed to do.
Well, right.
Yeah, that's plain and simple. That, you know, that's the guy that got things done.
And literally, I would need to willfully flip from one to the other at one point. But at a certain point, it became fluid. And really, the most useless thing was the childish, you know, side of me. But as I mature and do not require constant battle and survivability, that, you know, you use your injuries maybe to motivate some of that.
Sure.
And so there is rage, there is vengeance attached to that. There is, you know... If you let me loose, burning down the entire planet would be just fine.
Right.
You know, because scorched earth will not argue with me.
Right.
And it's not as though there's a winner or a loser. See, it's strange to explain this to anybody. And there are people that have known me for years have no clue about this. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But here's just what is. I can simultaneously hold really very different worldviews, and equally, I can hold them internally.
Mm-hmm.
One is not more legitimate than the other, except that I really only give a voice to one, usually.
Right.
but it doesn't mean that I can't. It's hard to explain.
I think I'm understanding what you're saying now. Obviously, the only one that fully understands it is you. But I'm following what you're getting at.
Well, it's hard to articulate. You understand?
Yeah.
Because
right. Oh no. Yeah.
This is not something you share with people generally.
Right.
Right. Now, why am I bringing all this up and going back into it? Okay. Because I could visualize this. I could access this in a way that made me really sharply aware of all of it and the reasons behind it and the memories and the, you know, there was emotional floods going on here. In fact, let me describe the stages of what would go on here. At first, I would wait around a bit and, you know, get a little bit of something going. And there was a little variation here where there was kind of a harder transition in where I would shake a bit and get really shook up. And then there was a mellow transition in. And this changed a couple different ways. And I think it was because of the different potencies of what I had. The
yes,
more
that's very possible.
Yeah, the more potent ones went in rougher. There was kind of a hard kind of trip in, kind of like the first rattle when you go on a roller coaster and you get that first hit of, you know, of rushed pressure and G forces and all that, and it's a little like got to get used to it. Sort of thing, and I mean psychologically, physically, it all felt the same kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's just this sort of gentle transition that would occur also. The rougher transition really provided the better effect. But again, unpleasant. And simultaneous, by the way. These are not things that are all separated, but all of this would go on at the same time. But the transition in was pretty weird because sometimes it was very rough and it would usually start with the same kind of burst of emotion. See, I used to get intermittent seizures from the head injuries. And from my end of it, not from the outside observer's end of it, but from my end of it, the worst part of it, you know, wasn't like losing control of your body temporarily. But to me, it was losing control of my emotions, which would be the warning shot that, you know, you're gonna lose control of the rest of you temporarily too. So I kind of had that sensation going in, where the emotions start to jump around all over the place, and you know I'm looking to repair some negative things, and psychologically and physically. So, what do we got to go face? Negativity. So my emotions would go into a lot of different directions. Now that's not to say that I spent the whole time miserable, but I think it's worthy of mention that the majority of the time was unpleasant, but it gave me the ability to it's nuts. I let go of control and kind of gave myself over to this stuff. And at the same time, I gained control of a whole lot that I had no control over before.
Yeah, and it was a trade-off, but it sounds like it's certainly worth it.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Am I making sense here?
You're making perfect sense to me. You know, I'm kind of likening it to. You know, you're carrying something around with you your whole life, and you absolutely have to carry it around, no matter, regardless of how miserable it's making you, because you can't survive without it. But you get to a point in your life where you know that the demon that's on the outside, you know, you're finally getting it taken care of, and you're ready to give this rock that you're carrying back. Except for you realize, well, hell, I've had this rock my whole life. Do I want to give it away? So you know, you're almost. You know, or it could be you could go into the whole mythical kind of the, you know, more philosophical. It'd be more Nietzschean than anything else. But you know, one of the selves that you've needed to get you through is leaving. Is going to die. That you know that self is you know no longer may no longer be necessary. That you know the part of yourself that protected you through all the trauma and allowed you to function and to you know live day to day in the environment you were in, and you kept that. You know, you kept that part of yourself for the whole your whole life. Why would you have gotten rid of it? You needed it.
Well,
but
see,
now, if the trauma, if you're healing it, that self's leaving. So that's what I'm. That's how I'm interpreting what you're saying.
Okay, so I'm going to give you a little surprise then here, because to my mind, this wasn't about. I had already done that process.
Okay.
To my mind, I had done the like, in other words, my survivability depended on the fact that I could separate these things, that I could break off pieces of myself.
Right.
But previous to the use of the psilocybin, I felt as though I had totally put these things away. They're still in there. And quite frankly, what I felt I had to do, and what became just self-evident as far as I was concerned was to reintegrate all of this.
Yeah, you had to face it.
I got to face it. I got to bring it back in. And it is all me. And, you know, I've given you the key heavy points of this, but there's so much more complexity to it in this compartmentalization.
Yeah, the details would be endlessly complex, but
so
framework is there.
Each one of these things, which I have kind of segregated and compartmentalized, which are almost different personalities, to be honest with you, I had to bring them all together in my mind. It's like, no, these are pieces of me which did not deserve to be amputated.
Right.
But I did my level best to psychologically amputate them. Now that goes along with the fact that I feel, and again, I wasn't going in there thinking I was going to deal with any of the physical trauma to the brain.
Right.
But I got to tell you, I feel as though that was just part of the deal.
Yeah. I think you heal the physical trauma, you're going to heal you're going to heal a lot of the other things that could have been as a result.
Well,
at least, if not as a result, exacerbated by the physical trauma.
And it's cyclical. You know, the physical trauma being healed means that maybe you now have better recall on emotional trauma. The emotional trauma being healed means that you might be able to deal with the physical. Like, it's literally a cyclical thing,
right.
Which I did not take into account going in. I was just after the, you know, I need to pull the PTSD back. I need to lighten the load of what was depression. I need to pull this misery off of me. However it gets done, and that's all I was after, is the psychological effect. But the physical is profound too, and it wasn't just the lightning strikes. I mean, there were headaches that were pretty vicious, and there were times, I got to be honest with you, that I knew something was going on. And I can't tell you what it was, just I know something's happening.
Right.
And it's all happening inside. Like, I, you know, in the rest of the outside world, really irrelevant to me. Which is sort of unusual. I mean, I was communicating with one person.
Right.
And there were other things that don't make this entirely nightmarish and clinical as well. I mean, you know, when I got to eat food, I was very happy with certain food because things tasted better.
Interesting.
You know, and my sense of smell was heightened. My physical sensations were heightened, and that's another weird thing, is that I did get pains in places where really I had not felt pain in a while. There's, for instance, you know, and this is weird, again, not psychological, not connected to the brain necessarily, although obviously partially, is, you know, I've had parts of my legs that I have not felt in years. And I've ascribed it to nerve damage. And, you know, I've accidentally, you know, stuck myself in the leg with something and not felt it. When I was working as a glass glazier, I was afraid a couple of times that I was going to put the drill in my leg and not know it, a power drill, you know, because of the way I was doing certain things. And I'm like, well, right. I got to be careful of that, huh? And I mean, I did, you know, nick my pants and whatnot, and it probably should have stung me, and it didn't, you know, because just dead skin down into the muscle in certain areas, like an almost a marbling effect in my legs. Mm-hmm. And so I felt some pains there, but a lot of pains in my head. I had forgotten about a couple of head injuries. I mean, like, not totally forgotten, but never think to mention it when somebody brings up, you know, you ever had a head injury? And it's like, yeah, I had this. Right, I forgot right. about a couple other ones that, you know, were pretty, would be fairly profound, should be part of my medical history. And it was like I remembered those things. I remembered the incidents of them. A bunch of memories flooded back in, which I don't know if that would happen to everybody. But again, because you got frontal temporal lobe damage, which is one of the things that, you know, they tried to scientifically ascribe to some of my violent behavior when I was a teenager. Is that I was having temporal lobe seizures. And I don't know if they were right or wrong, but yeah, I know I took
I
damage.
But I know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, but I took damage there, which means that once you do something like that to a circuit, you know, you never know how it's going to reformulate itself.
Right.
So possibilities are there, but I felt pains in places in my head where I didn't think I could feel pains. And... And there were flashes and things, and some of that, you know, nice trippy fun stuff that would be there that really was just an amplification of stuff that I normally see anyway.
Right. Yeah.
Some Very of that stuff behaved along with it too, where I mean there were things where I felt like a shock and saw a flash. And there were audio things going on, and you know, I had a fully immersive experience, and did wind up having a conversation or two with myself.
Okay.
Where I feel as though I was able to visualize and interact with kind of earlier versions of me, which is odd. and not something that I thought I would get out of it, although other people kind of told me that. Like I told you, you're going to introduce yourself to yourself. And
Right.
That didn't happen at first. It didn't happen until quite a few times in. But there was just a lot of stuff going on. And time itself, by the way, very slow. Very, very slow. You know, I probably could only maintain a intense experience for a couple hours, but those couple hours felt really long.
Right.
I had a lot of time, and I was kind of glad I had a lot of time because I was able to, again, work with things and literally visualize stuff. I mean, and reorganize certain things. Now, it was a lot to reorganize, so, you know, you got a wall-to-ceiling garage, it's not going to get done in an hour. You know what I mean?
Sure, right.
And I certainly had that, and not everything, you know, there was a lot of sharp objects in there, you know?
Right.
So some things I had to do carefully, some things I didn't. And as we get toward the end of this hour, I want to open it up to questions to you, because in the next hour, we're going to talk a little more about the experience and probably get into some details that I am not aware of. Because you know, here we go.
So you said, like, kind of the induction. You have an induction phase, but you've had that with each experience. So that initial, you know, kind of leading you into the experience, that hasn't changed.
No, it's still. It's been probably about 6 weeks since I did any. You know, so. As of 6 weeks ago.
Right.
That's certainly part of it. And I may or may not get done talking to you. And and go ahead and do this. Now, look, again, mm-hmm. I'm not doing this even for fun. This is part of a process, and I do sure. feel as though it's finite. I will get to a point where I've accomplished as much as I can, and I think it will not be, you know, not like I'm going to need them my whole life. But then again, right. I don't know. See, I'm going in with this with an open mind. Initially, I thought to myself, I can do this twice.
Right.
And be done.
Right.
And that, you know, I got a completely different experience than I thought I was going to get. And sure. I got to do certain things, but we are not done at 10.
Right.
I can't see, you know, like, it's this is not going to be a years long process, though.
It may be something that, you know, periodically in the future you need to do one time, you know, again, just, you know, kind of maintenance therapy, if you want to call it that.
I'm open to that possibility.
Yeah. You know? I don't know. I don't know. I
mean, you don't know.
Hope would be that the effects are permanent, that it, you know, that it's done what you set out to have it do.
Well, that's the other weird thing, too, is that after each experience, I got to tell you that I have a sense that it has continued to do things outside of the trip itself.
Right. Yeah, you had told me about some of those.
And
but you still have the positive physical effects that you were telling me about?
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, I've been ever since I got to about the third session of this, because again, the first two were sort of just not so much, you know, just
right.
kind of minor. Ever since I got through like the third session or so, I was walking with a cane for the past several years because I literally did not have the strength to keep myself up straight and not get this vice-like sensation on the lower part of my back. That would literally force me to not be able to walk or stand.
Mm-hmm.
The cane, you know, made it take longer, but I had a hell of a time doing any of that. You know, if you took me to a grocery store and I went down 3-4 aisles, that's it. You're carting me out.
Gotcha.
You know, and since I started doing this, I'm not able to walk many miles or anything. I'm still in a lot of pain. My chronic pain has not gone away.
Right.
Some of the more intense parts of it are down.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a cure for pain at all, but what has happened is I've gotten stronger.
Sure.
And I have more strength. I can, you know, I'm still in pain walking around, but I'm not getting crippled by it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I still am not, I don't think I could do what I used to do where I would walk, you know, 10, 12 miles a day.
Right, right.
I don't believe I could do that at all. But I can get away with a
I'm
mile.
I'm not sure I could even more.
Well, but I can get away with a mile, you know.
Yeah.
And I'll ache, and I still ache, and I still have bad back and neck pain. But I have picked up strength, physically and so on. I know we're going to have to get into that in the, third episode, but every time I could feel that was coming.
Right.
And I also felt afterwards, I actually got sleep.
You were telling me about that. Yeah.
Which solid. Okay. Previous to this, past, I don't know, 10 years, you know, generally speaking, unless chemically induced, which I'm not going to describe, but, well, you know what, screw it, the hell with it. Every once in a while, I might obtain something to knock myself out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying I did it all the time, but if after a couple of months where you're only able to sleep an hour and a half at a clip,
oh God, yeah.
And you're when you do sleep, you're disturbed by night terrors, paranoid reaction to noise, or nightmares, which are different than night terrors. You know, 6 months of that or so, you might go to a drug dealer and say you got something to knock me out.
Sure.
And I have. I mean, honestly. Right.
Anybody would. Anybody
I needed would. Sleep. You know, I sat and tried to drink, you know, drink a bottle of whiskey, too, to see if that would knock me out. That didn't knock me out. Mm. So, you know, but you go get a couple Xanax or something, you know, even though you're not supposed to have them, quite honestly. You know what? Judge me all you want. I needed to sleep. I'm not saying you,
no
Captain
Trish. Here.
I'm not saying you. I'm saying anybody.
Yeah, I know.
You know, thinking about, oh, well, you're going. Yeah, screw that. I would have swallowed, you know, rocks from your driveway if it would have gotten me to hell to sleep.
Right.
So, you know, this is the thing. I actually got sleep afterwards. And in fact, like, I was like, whoa, I just slept 6 hours. Like, that's freaking amazing.
Right.
You know, I'm just saying, there were immediate things that were obvious that were part of the process that were, again, extremely unpleasant, physically, emotionally, psychologically, and I do separate all three of those things. But all of this very simultaneously was, for the most part, unpleasant.
Right.
And you know what? I know what it looked like from the inside.
Yes, you do.
You know, and I'm probably having a hard time, and I am withholding a couple of things.
And you certainly within your rights.
Yeah, and I do believe I have the right to do that. There are certain things that I don't think everybody in the world needs to know. But
no, that's fine.
But the thing is, I'm giving you a good general idea. And this would last, you know, to my knowledge, I think about 4 hours of intensity. But as I said, I mean, it could have been days long with the way I felt the clock roll. You know, and I was able to, for the most part, function, although there were certain time periods going in, you know, that rough trip in I was talking about, where, you know, I probably could have moved but didn't feel as though I should move.
Right.
And things like that. And there was a bit of disorientation, like a dizziness, but on multiple levels. And I discovered that I was better off with different types of music or different types of input or light. And I had to learn that as I went along. And that's kind of funny because I did a whole Black Sabbath cover thing on the Short Attention Span DJ Theater before this. Black Sabbath is my music. It allows me to emotionally and mentally organize myself in a unique way.
Okay.
But there's other stuff that worked for me that maybe won't work for somebody else.
Sure.
But the thing is, the tones, the vibration. I became acutely aware of a lot of things that, you know, were just brighter, were bigger, were louder. Definitely had noise sensitivity. You know, where, what the hell is that noise? You know, stuff that might be commonplace and stuff like that. But I think we'll take a break here. And, you know, if you have any other thoughts or any other questions you want to formulate during the break, we'll do that. And we should be taking a special call on the other side of the break. So we're going to continue on. This is the second episode so far, anyway, of the psilocybin discussion on Ocelli.com. And it is definitely the a special thing where I'm getting into some pretty personal stuff in order to tell you a story that I think could be helpful to some people that are seeking solutions. In other words, you know, may not be that this is your solution, but I think just the idea that there is something that could be helpful to people that are suffering is worthy of exploration. Anyway, again, not an endorsement of what I did or anything like that, but we'll continue on with the discussion after we collect our thoughts on the other side of this break. Stick around.
All right.
Myself and Captain Trips, and one more speaker. We'll be right back.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com.
Perhaps you're invested deeply.
Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
Support Chuck O'Chelly at Chili.com. $5 a month is the price of coffee. Go to Chili.com, hit the donate button, and if we all do that part, we will get him as wired as a computer. Don't know if that's it, but just support him. He's a good thing. Great show, great people, and great topics. So that's it. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Of course, you can do it on Patreon.com, or you can, because I have a link there on the website. You can just click the Patreon banner, go there, or become a member at O'Chelly.com. Wasn't trying to do a commercial, but do appreciate you for thinking of it, Nature Boy. Thank you. And also thank you for your support personally, my friend.
Do you like history? Real history that you were never taught in schools? Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia. By author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before that'll open your eyes to events that led up to this. Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961. Get your copy today at Amazon.com. Why? The Vietnam War, by author Mike Swanson.
O'Chelly.com.
Learn from our relatively recent history, my brother. That's where I'm coming from. I've been all powerful to people.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Chelly.
Second hour of the O'Chelly Effect begins a little bit late, but don't worry, I'll just cut out some of the music from the middle. And who knows how long this episode might last anyway, because it is a special one. We are discussing the psilocybin experiment that I conducted on myself, effectively. And Captain Trips is with me, and I'm hoping to sit back a little bit and get a couple of ideas that he's been able to gather from the first hour discussion. But also, we have Mrs. O joining us, and I have her joining us on the phone because that's just easier for the way I'm set up over here. So we're not taking any other calls, but Mrs. O is here to maybe offer some observations or answer some questions about what it is she could observe, because she was basically the only person to observe me during this. I know my daughter saw me briefly at one point, and she just complained that I was breathing really loud. Which, you know, I forgot to mention that, actually, is that I actually found just simple things with my body. Everything just sort of felt better, even breathing. I was kind of enjoying my breathing at certain points when I wasn't in pain or feeling some of these other sensations that I don't know how to describe. But anyway, Mrs. O, were you listening to the first hour of this?
Off and on, because I had children to deal with.
Okay. Sorry about that. Maybe
well, not ours, just other ones outside.
Oh, the ones outside, yeah. Okay, yeah. Well, I'll find out about that after the show. Anyway, God knows. You know, kids...
It'll probably make for a good on-air story.
It might. Who knows? Maybe we'll do that next Friday or something. But anyway, so... You heard part of it, though. Maybe Captain Trips has questions about what you might have been able to observe before.
Yeah, I'm very curious to know what you saw, what it looked like to you, Kim.
Okay. Well, it took about, I guess, an hour before it started to take effect.
Mm-hmm.
And he was in our bedroom is where the broadcasting is done, and there's a chair that Chuck sits in most of the time, and he was sitting in that, and you can just kind of watch him relax a little bit. But just as a quick little background, I am taking psychology courses, and one of the things that fascinates me the most is multiple personalities, mm-hmm. which is now not called that.
Yeah, it's changed again, I heard.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm embarrassed to say I don't remember what it's called because I've known it for multiple personalities forever.
Right, right.
But there were two distinct personalities that did come out. Mm-hmm. And one of them was one that I would say didn't take... I don't want to use any bad words, but you know, was the no nonsense type. You're not going to mess with this person. You know that he could hurt you if necessary. His whole body changed, and even like the facial expressions and even his eyebrows. They're usually a straight line, but they kind of had like a little triangle, like you go straight line and then a triangle and then a straight line over both eyebrows.
That's interesting.
I mean, both eyes, and the voice was much different.
Yeah, and that's the compartment or the aspect of the personality that I was talking about in the last hour. You know, that was the protector. You know, that was the one that did what he had to do to get by.
Exactly. Yeah. And you, if you've got in the way of things, I think.
And it, it wasn't personal. It wasn't personal. Okay. Yeah. Right. Right.
Right. Oh, I wasn't afraid of him.
Right. No. Right. Right.
It takes a lot to me to be afraid of somebody, and I wasn't afraid of that personality. And then the other one was clearly a little boy.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly.
Interesting. That's fascinating.
It makes shift in voice.
It makes perfect sense. No, I was gonna say it makes perfect sense. You know, knowing what I know, and you know, knowing the part of Chuck's life that had the most trauma, it sounds like, is, you know, so yeah, there's a young kid in there that never got to be a young kid that's trying to get out.
See, and what's weird is go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Looking for mothering.
Yeah.
And be told that it's going to be, everything's going to be okay, and nobody's going to hurt you, and you're safe, and you know, I won't let anybody hurt you.
Right.
So you know, there was that as well, and clearly a different. It was just clearly different posture, different voice.
Sure.
A different facial expression. So to me, it's fascinating because it's something that I'm interested in studying anyway. And
right, I was.
What it opens up to me
is just the thought of, you know, we're all parents. So how many things we've done for or said to our children that we never really gave a second thought to? It was just something you said, like you said, everything's going to be okay. Don't worry. You know, it's all going to be fine. But you know, they're kind of throwaway comments, but we get to see what can happen to a person that doesn't get that as a child.
Well, and here's the thing.
Right.
Look, I would not say that this is separate from me. It's not as though we have complete split personalities here.
No, not at all. Not at all. No, I don't. You're not. At least I'm not understanding you implying that at all. I can't, you know, it doesn't, from everything you've said, you've never really, you've clarified it a few times and said that it's not a true split personality, and you're not, excuse me, to me, you're not describing it as such. You're just definitely describing it as, that almost like you can control it. You can, you know, turn on who you need to turn on consciously to deal with the situation you have to deal with.
I don't think that was always the case, though. I think that, and that's the thing, is I could see for the first time in my mind that I had, without being conscious of it, intentionally done this.
Mm-hmm.
And that was odd to me because, look, in the moment, in the time, you don't know that, okay, so what I'm going to do is place, you know, all of... I don't really suffer from fear very much.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be because I think I gave that all to that one compartment.
Yeah.
As much as I could. I mean, it's not as though I'm, you know, completely devoid of any sort of sensation similar to fear, but it's never been a profound thing for me. I am not a fearful individual in general, except I think there was a point in time where I was, and I think it all got, again, kind of locked behind a door in my own mind.
Yeah, well, you had your brain had to find a way to deal with it, because and to allow you to continue to function. And I think our brains realize, you know, even if we don't realize how likely the situation is to change. You know, if it's just, is this just a real temporary thing, or is this something that is going to require more, you know, longer term adaptations to deal with? And in your case, your brain, you know, you knew somewhere in your brain, you know, somewhere in your mind, you knew that you were going to have to deal with this, and you had to come up with a way to protect yourself and to allow you to continue to function.
Right.
And that's exactly what it sounds like to me.
You know, and as I said, a lot of it was unpleasant.
Right.
You know, and both physically and, again, psychologically and emotionally, gotta lay all three out. There was definitely a level of unpleasant all the way around. Now, as far as these, you know, again, I'd go ahead and, you know, talk more about what it is she was able to see or hear. It's fine. We've got very little limitation on this. There's just a couple of aspects of this I want to keep to myself, which I'm confident Kim knows where that's at. But the majority of this, you know, go right ahead, go into it, whatever you think. I could tell you that there was relitigation of a lot of terrible things in the past, but also just a lot of information in general that started to come back to me. Again, this sort of overwhelming emotional flood of mixed stuff, which I don't know, shook me up internally. I don't know what it looked like externally. I'm sure that when I was in the thick of it, I probably wasn't talking a lot. But coming down, I think I started talking a lot more. I don't know. Kim could probably explain that better.
Sure.
Well, just for the record, it's called dissociative identity disorder.
Ah, okay.
I couldn't remember it now. That's what it's called now.
Okay.
But it is fascinating how the brain takes over to protect the original soul of the person. Not the original soul, but the soul of the person.
I didn't think of it that way. It's an interesting way. Yeah, I didn't think of it, describing it that way, but yeah, that makes perfect sense.
Because it protected the young child that Chuck, you know, was way back then from these horrible things that were happening. So it's a coping and a survival mechanism, really, and it's quite fascinating, I think, if you know it's something you're interested in. But anyway,
it's endlessly fascinating. I think it's stuff the stuff I wanted to save for the part three. Did he need you to facilitate at all? And I don't mean physically facilitate. I mean, you know, as you were experiencing this, were you talking him through it, or was it more a matter of you were physically present if he needed you?
Let me give you my perspective on that, and then she could provide hers. Because to my mind, what I was doing was involved in something that didn't involve her. And I would, for lack of a better description, kind of poke my head out every once in a while and check in with her. That's what went on with, you know, like with the majority of it. Now, I that wasn't all of it.
Right.
But I think there was just a lot of things going on that were internal that, I mean, I was acutely aware that nobody else could see it. I think I might have asked her a couple times, can you see this or hear this? But quite frankly, I think I was fully aware that most of it was going on internally. Okay. And I would just kind of, you know, are you okay with all this?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, I probably had some involuntary reactions and actions that I was not aware of because I was so deeply immersed, you know, at the height of this, you know, that 4-hour period, like I was talking about, where she's talking about, okay, it takes an hour to go in, takes about 4 hours to go through the time period again, felt like a lot longer to me. And then probably another hour or so to sort of come down off of it. You know, total of a 6-hour experience, maybe, I'm thinking, but maybe I'm wrong about that. 'Cause again, me watching a clock, I really didn't care about the clock. I didn't care about a lot of things except noises that annoyed me or light that annoyed me. I was happier in the dimly lit room, happier with certain music. Like I said, at certain points, you know, yeah, we could put on cartoons, but, you know, no news. None of the world around me, I didn't want to know about it because I was going internally.
Right.
But like I said, Kim might have seen it differently. Do you think I was just sort of poking my head out every once in a while and saying, hey, is everything okay out here?
Yeah, I didn't, I only engaged when you asked me to, or, where I felt maybe there was something you needed me to help you with. I didn't sit there and talk to you the whole time.
Right.
You know, we put on music, like, one night was Black Sabbath, another night was, music from the 70s, you know, like, Motown and, you know, stuff like that.
But no Led Zeppelin.
But
no.
Oh no!
I know. I had to throw that. I have to throw that dig in there. That's more for my friend Joe. But
no problem. No Led Zeppelin. No Bon Jovi. Okay. These are things so I do not listen
you can
to.
You can have Bon Jovi. Yeah. I'll concede that one.
Okay. Fair enough. No Led Zeppelin. No Bon Jovi. No music from the. You know what it was? It was familiar stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I break down music in my mind mathematically as well as melodically as well as, you know, and I got to tell you, it's like, oh, certain things are just comfortable and better mm-hmm. for me. So, you know, but we also had cartoons on a couple times, but absolutely no news. Like I said, forget the news. I don't want to hear it. And stuff
well,
like
anymore,
that.
Anymore, you have to differentiate when you say cartoons because that's all the news is.
Well, yeah.
But I digress.
I mean, you know, stuff that is not connected to any form of reality whatsoever. Oh, right, still the news. No, I mean, animation.
We won't get out of this one.
Animation, how about that? Actual animation. You know, a little bit of that, but not always that. I don't know, what other questions do you have there?
So I was still thinking of the cartoon. Sorry,
it's okay.
you had made it. You made an interesting comment about food tasting different. That's interesting to me. Did you have like different cravings for stuff that you normally wouldn't want, or is it just stuff that the things that you normally eat tasted differently?
Yes,
it's just very interesting.
The things I liked more. Mm-hmm. Basically, is what it came down to. You know. Go ahead.
Chocolate bars.
Yeah, chocolate. Chocolate is a good thing.
Chocolate bars.
Mm-hmm. Nothing wrong with that.
Thing that I had to find in the cabinet.
Well, I hope you're keeping a list. I hope you're keeping a list so you can restock these things if you need them again.
Right.
Well, I tell you, I told.
But yeah, I mean.
I told Captain Trips I might do it again tonight, and the one sadness I have is that I don't have a sub because I enjoyed the sub sandwich the couple times that I had a sub sandwich available to me.
I forgot about that.
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah.
Do you get, is it and this, because I don't know, I've never done these myself. Is it similar to the munchies? You know, when you're smoking cannabis.
No.
Is it that kind of?
No.
No. Okay.
No. It's just that I was hungry. See, if I stay up late enough, I get hungry anyway.
Okay. So it was just a normal hunger, but then the taste sensations were different.
Yeah, and it was just like everything a little more intense. For my experiences. So, like at one point I also banged my foot, and I was kind of like, wow, that's pain. I didn't, and by the way, I don't bang my foot that often, but we have this one kind of hazard in the bedroom, which I hit once. And I was just like, oh crap. I was, off balance a lot. And another weird thing to talk about this experience is that I felt as though I could see better. Now,
I meant to ask you about that, if it has had any effect on your vision. Now, is it something that's lasting, or is it just when you're going through the experience?
There is a profound shift in my vision when going through the experience. But as people might know from, 2020, I kind of just totally lost the vision in the one eye for a while.
Right.
I got it back, a little bit. And since I've been doing this now, we're not talking about it's curing my sight, but...
No, right.
Kind of feels like it restored just about the level I was at before I lost it last year.
That's good.
In the one eye. The other eye I'm not so sure about. But while, experiencing the chemical effects, I did not use my glasses at all, and I didn't want to, because that kind of made some of the light tricks and things annoying. So I had to get rid of the glasses. But I felt like my eyes were working better. As a matter of fact, at a certain point, and here's one of the things about my eye condition, is that generally speaking, I can only use one eye at a time.
Okay.
Anyway, no matter what the condition is. I was a little bit freaked out by being able to occasionally I couldn't maintain it, but I could triangulate it, it seemed like, to my, with my two eyes. Which, for people who don't know, that's what allows you to have perception of depth. So I had trouble getting a straw in my mouth while looking at it, because I'm not accustomed to the thing sticking up at me like a bad 3D movie.
Right.
Which is what it looks like to me when my eyes both work together. It's like, what the hell? It doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
I'm thinking of this more from an anatomical and a kind of a neuroanatomical point of view, and it actually does make sense, because without, like I said, I don't know the specific pharmacodynamic properties of psilocybin, so I would have to look this up myself, but it sounds like because the area of the brain, the different, like with the sensations, and then the fact that it's allowing you to use both eyes for a period of time, and that's just fascinating, because I said, it's working deep in the brain, and it almost sounds like it's working on just different neural pathways that were damaged, whether it was damaged through trauma or whatever. It almost sounds like it's doing some physical repair as well, to be quite honest with you.
But that's what it felt like. I can't verify this, independently, but that's what it felt like. Now, that ability to use both eyes has never been something I could really do. It's happened on rare occasions.
Right.
Which is why I sort of was like, whoa, this is both of my eyes working at the same time.
Yeah.
So, and I'm not even saying they worked right. That was the thing. It was confusing. See, normally my brain's making calculations to figure out where that straw is.
Right.
And instead of doing that, I saw it, and it was like I couldn't figure out how to not stick myself in the face with this thing because it just spatially made no sense. It was like a different pattern I'm looking at.
It would be like someone with, you know, what's considered normal sight stepping into your vision, and I wouldn't know what to do mm-hmm. to get by with it. So it makes perfect sense that if, you know, we switch places, so to speak, we'd both be confused.
Well, that's the thing. It's very disorienting. Like when somebody loses an eye and they're trying to navigate the world now without their previous ability to see depth.
Right.
You know, you can adjust, you can do it, but I'm accustomed to not having it. So it was very weird. Maybe Mrs. O has some other ideas about other weird things that went on like that. But I just remembered that, that part of it. But anything else that was, like, different, I don't know, behaviorally or anything else that you'd like to add in here?
Well, one of the other things, too, when it was probably towards the, I don't know, maybe second or third hour in, you said that you could, like, feel it working on your brain, because there was a couple times where it hurt.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember that.
No, as I said, there was, I've said this I think a few times, Captain Trebs, there were several times where it was painful, uncomfortable, mm-hmm. and also sensations which I can't describe as pain or discomfort, just I don't know what they are. Weird feelings, physical feelings that went on here. I literally felt like I could feel it working its way through my brain, you know, which might have been a psychological thing or may indeed have been something I felt. I don't know. Again, I'm not presenting
this. I'm thinking the little kid meme that says, why not both? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, especially with this type of substance, that you know, everyone knows how it heightens sensation.
Mm-hmm.
So it certainly could just be that it was allowing you to experience a sensation that without it we couldn't feel. You know what I mean? It almost like opening up a, you know, another sense that isn't, you know, that is a sense channel that's not open under normal circumstances.
There you go.
With parts of the brain that have been damaged from
mm-hmm.
different things that he's been through,
mm-hmm.
if parts of those parts of the brain are, if you want to call them, dead, and something is trying to force its way in there, I think you're going to feel some sort of sensation also.
Yeah,
because
actually,
I will tell you that he has a, I don't want to say a different personality now, because that's mm-hmm. not really fair to say, but there's a new level of calm,
mm-hmm.
which it took me a couple days to get used to a little bit, because I'm, which everybody knows, I'm more quick to snap,
mm-hmm.
and Chuck's level of calm was almost too calm, where it was uncomfortable for me.
Right.
And like when there were times when he used to get hurt by something, like that edge of the bed that he stubs his toe on, I mean, that I was waiting for him to start throwing things, and you know, that's gone. So it has had a profound effect on how he reacts to things.
Well, I mean, which, I wonder.
You know, again,
sudden pain.
This should be legal.
Sudden pain for me has always resulted in instant rage.
Right.
And I don't know if that's an artifact of the PTSD or if I'm just an a-hole. I don't know, but
I wouldn't think it would be the latter. I think it would be. You know, we also can't discount, I know we talked about this a little bit in the last episode, we can't discount the effects of just the intrauterine environment that you were in while your brain was developing. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we don't know how your brain developed differently just based on the stress that you were experiencing before you were even born. You know, a lot of the research now, it's funny because when we're done with this, I have to write a paper on schizophrenia. But anyway, so I've been looking into this. It's just ironic that it happened right now. A lot of the research now into schizophrenia is really pointing toward, you know, you have to have the, you know, there's certainly genetic variants that are involved, but then it really is coming down to just the in utero environment that, you know, you're gestated in, mm-hmm. the stress that the fetus is going through, you know, nutritionally on the mom's side, substances, her stress level. I think they're looking down things to, it's as far as infection, at certain, you know, at the right time during gestation, you know, the inflammation that's caused can cause a developmental anomaly in certain parts of the brain. So what I'm, you know, it almost sounds like what I was getting at is, it almost sounds like these sensations, it sounds more almost like a, like I was saying, neural pathways, but almost like connectivity, like parts of the brain that weren't able to connect with what they needed to connect with. For whatever reason, psilocybin is facilitating that and allowing, you know, almost like a restoration of normal connectivity in certain parts of the brain.
That's certainly what it felt like.
Yeah, sparking the neurons.
Yeah, that's exactly what it sounds like.
Sparking the neurons that weren't either, that were damaged or mm-hmm. weren't ever allowed to connect in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think we'll ever know. And personally, I think it's just, I doubt it was just one thing in Chuck's life. I think it was the unique combination.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because, you know, in hearing, you know, the stories he's told me about his childhood and what I read in the manuscript and everything, it's that taking the value judgment out of it, or the good or the bad out of it, just the uniqueness of that type of rearing experience is not common. So just all those factors put in together, I think that from everything I can tell, this is being even more successful than I could have expected it to be.
Well, see, that's the thing again, is that I didn't, all I wanted was dial back this PTSD experience, which is the best description I have for, you know, again, that overwhelming sensation I tried to describe, you know, independently in the first episode, right?
Right.
And also there was a deep sort of progressive depression that was just dragging me down. It was literally draining me. And all I wanted was, can we stop that?
Right. You were lost at sea with a lifeline, and you just wanted someone to come along with a lifeboat, but instead someone pulled you up onto a 5-star cruise liner.
Pretty much, yeah. That's what's happened here, and I'm not saying it's all perfect.
No, not at all. But I'm just saying you simply were seeking salvation,
right?
You know, you were looking just for survival, and not only did you get that, it sounds like you're getting the therapy that you need to not only survive but to heal.
Well, I just wanted shelter, and somebody mm-hmm. brought me a meal and a change of clothes.
Yeah,
you know,
so
it was like, plus I got that shelter. And you know, we're going to discuss that in the third episode for sure. I don't know if you have next Saturday available, but
I have to look at. We might have to wait a week. I can't remember. Hold on, let me see. I can do that now if you want.
Well, no, we'll do that when we get off air.
That's fine.
But I mean, what else? You know, Kim, what else do you think needs to be thrown in here?
Well, other than it's very upsetting to realize that we can't get this
yeah
anywhere,
right?
You know, and to me, that it's criminal to use plants that grow naturally on our earth for healing, and we can't have access to it. But yet, if he were to go to the doctor and say, look, you know, I'm really depressed, and they throw him, you know, a synthetic pill. To me, that's very, it's just very frustrating, because I've seen what this has done. He's going to do it again probably tonight. And why, I don't understand why it's such a freaking issue. Like, cannabis helps some people with PTSD. Cannabis helps people who are going through chemotherapy and give them an appetite so they can at least get nutrition through food. And yet, you can go to jail for carrying that plant. Or you can go to jail for carrying these mushrooms that grow in the ground, for God's sakes.
No, I understand
It's just, it's extremely infuriating to me.
No, it sure
that
is.
I can't go to the weed dude up the street and say, hey, you have any of these? Or the store and just get them. That's really all I...
Well, you know, and I'm not even saying that it's...
It makes me angry.
No, and I understand. I'm not saying it's for everybody either. I don't know that it is. I'm just describing...
Probably not. It's you know, but I do get what Kim's saying. I mean, we have this stuff that occurs naturally that you should be able to use if needed.
Yeah, of course.
You gotta fight the state to heal yourself. But if you just wanted a synthetic antidepressant or, you know, whatever other crap is being peddled this week, you know, that's okay.
Well, as long as I can go to the clinic, I'm sure I can get some of those. But I've tried those. You understand? Yeah. And outside of...
I don't think the synthetic shit's ever... It could ever be as good as the natural.
No, outside of... And to be honest with you, again, you know, Big Pharma gives us, you know, certain sedatives and things that I think are helpful in a short-term use. You know, and as I said earlier, there were times where it was time to go get something to go to sleep. You know, and... again, the opioids, of course, a twisted version of what is also available on the earth, but I have a different view of that as well, but no need to get into that here. You know, I'm just wondering, though, you know, about other observations here, because we're still talking about the actual process itself. You know, are there any other observations that you think you could offer here, hon, that are... you know, of interest that maybe we didn't discuss? You know, is there something else to it? I mean, look, I wasn't like, I don't believe I was outwardly doing anything too erratic or crazy or anything.
Doesn't sound like it.
Outside of talking to myself some, which, you know, what can you do?
Well, I, under the circumstances, I would have expected that.
You know, went through a lot of emotions, though. You
know,
go ahead.
Yeah, you didn't get violent or, you know, anything like that. You knew who I was sitting there, and you know, there were times where you didn't even speak at all. You just kind of laid there on the bed listening to the music. So at that point, I think you were just you know, experiencing whatever it was doing to you inside. But again, I mean, it's not for everybody. I remember when I was in boarding school, this guy had a bad trip, and I mean, it scared the hell out of me. And
you know, I
refused to ever try.
Yeah,
so,
I mean,
it isn't for everybody.
Sure, and I think it all boils down to, you know, what is it that you're going for? You know, like, you know, Chuck was good. You know, Chuck had a specific purpose for doing this. I mean, I think even self exploration is a specific purpose. But are you doing it to heal yourself or to you know, learn yourself more deeply, or are you just, you know, looking to have a good time? So I think the mindset, which is why, you know, why I was had asked Chuck about that, like where was he before, you know, in mentally, where was he before the first experience with it? But And I think people that – I think a lot of people that have the bad trips just – they just – it ends up being a result of they had no idea what they were what they were playing with and how powerful it could be.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that's what it is. I mean, I think it's a –
They may have went into it in not the the right mind.
Or have gone into it. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I think that's it too. But I think a lot of it is simply – you know, you could just chalk it up to these people are completely naive. They just don't know the power of what they're playing with.
Well, see, but objectively, it's not even necessarily about the mushrooms. Because I'll tell you something. I had a conversation recently, I won't say with who, where I said that effectively, look, if you're profoundly sad and upset and grieving, you don't want to add alcohol to that.
Sure.
And why? Because I've done that. I've tried it. And all that does is amplify the grief, the pain, and the, you know, the sadness.
Right.
For me, that's what it would do. And a lot of people go to, the, you know, let me drink my feelings away. It ain't a cowboy movie. You know what I mean? What it does is it amplifies that stuff. And quite frankly, I've done it personally. And as I explained to that person, you know, and there you have it. Just because, you know, you're on a stimulant, you're taking speed for some reason, you know, and there are medical reasons to give somebody some speed, right?
Mm-hmm. Very few, but yes, there are.
But there are. I'm just saying, there are.
No, you're right. You're right.
You know, it's not going to necessarily, it doesn't change what it is you're going in there with. Is all I've ever said about. Now look, people argue with me about the psychotropics, but honestly, I feel the same way across the board because it's my experience anyway. Maybe your experience will differ, but frankly, if you go into medicating something, again, you could have temporary relief. Like cannabis would help me temporarily sometimes with this problem I was having, but the thing is, it didn't heal anything. It just gave me a break. You know, if I took sleeping pills or whatever, or Xanax or whatever to go to sleep, that would allow me to go to sleep that night, but it didn't stop anything that was going on. So what I'm saying is that some things are temporary and some things are therapeutic, whether they're natural or not. So you go in with certain things, you have to be prepared with the fact that you don't get to drop them, you don't get to erase them with a high of any kind or a low of any kind. It's not going to erase it. But some things are more useful therapeutically, and all these situations vary. And that's how I viewed this. And I think it was an intelligent and healthy way to go in with it.
And, I think so.
You know, still not recommending this for somebody else. I'm just saying that for me, this is what happened. And it, you know, if it's possible for me, there's probably possibilities for others. That's all I'm saying. And you know what? Your solutions could vary. Not you, Captain Trips, or you, Mrs. O. Your solutions could vary, but the desperation that I was in, that I was almost convinced was really probably insurmountable, because there was no reason for me to believe for a second that any of this was really going to get better, because it never has before. You know, it shifts, it changes, volume might come up down a little bit, but I mean, realistically, I've just been dealing with this kind of thing my whole life, so you know, here we are. So as we get toward the end here, again, Ms. Zoe, if you got no other observations you want to add, we'll leave it at that. But maybe Captain Trips has a question or two still left in the quiver. I don't know.
No, I mean, I'm again, just like after the first episode, I'm taking it all in. And then I kind of digest it over a period of time. It's really interesting, though. It's you know, I almost feel like I'm listening to you describe, you know, healing on the cellular level, because as I'm thinking of all this, and you know, forgive me, I'm actually at this point looking at it purely clinically,
mm-hmm.
And I'm seeing how the repair work, so to speak, is being done on different connections and different pathways. As those things are starting to repair, that's allowing you to because of that, you're gaining the ability to deal with these things from the past that have been causing you trouble for 40 years plus.
Right.
That's how I'm envisioning of it. And neurology and this in-depth level of neurology is not my experience, so I will definitely say that. But I know enough about it. But it's fascinating to hear it in almost in real time. You know, it's not a clinical trial. It's not a research article. It's understanding what's going on through someone else's lived experience, and it's just fascinating from that perspective.
Right.
And I could just tell in talking to you before this all started, and now, and I can sense a difference in you too. Your attitude seems better. You're more talkative. You seem lighter, so to speak.
Well, you know, that we're going to get into in the third episode, but let me also give a caveat to all this.
Okay.
These things, on some level, might sound instantaneous, but I got to be honest about it. After each one of these experiences,
mm-hmm.
there was a time period of digestion here too, where
I'm sure.
I just spent the whole night with a whole bunch of ugly memories floating back into me. So I'm still sorting through that the next day, the next week.
Oh, I could imagine. I could even see if it's takes longer than that.
It has.
You're talking about years and years and years of your life that you're now having to sort through.
Well, and this was, again, it's different speeds. Mm-hmm. You know, good and bad things are hard to readjust to.
Of course.
Like, I wasn't sure if I was feeling stronger for the day because I got sleep,
mm-hmm.
or if I was, feeling better because I got to tell you, there was an after sensation of like having purged something out.
Well, that makes sense.
So you have that, when you vomit and you get rid of something that is too toxic for you to mm-hmm. digest in a physical way. You have that aftermath where you still don't feel great, but you feel a whole lot better.
Yeah.
So there's that sensation emotionally, mentally, and physically that had to be sorted through for me, and I had to adjust. So I had to adjust to negativity that I had to face, and I also had to adjust to positive things that mm-hmm. seemed to be taking hold, or positive lack of things that maybe I had sort of vomited out emotionally, so to speak. Best description. I'm sorry, Captain. I don't have
It makes perfect sense.
But that's what it felt like. And you know what's funny is that one time when I did try peyote, basically, out in Arizona, New Mexico. I'm thinking about Arizona lately. Arizona instead of New Mexico. Anyways, when I did that out in New Mexico, I did vomit. And that was according to my guide that night, part of the process.
Yeah. I've heard the same thing about ayahuasca.
I've heard that too, but I've never tried it.
I haven't either. It's something that I've always been interested in, but I don't know that I would ever do it. I would have to be in the right hands. I'd want someone extremely experienced with it before I would ever mess with it.
Yeah, me too. I've had Max Egan swears by it, and I've had mm-hmm. I've talked to him privately actually about that. And I didn't get into it too much on the show with him. We got into mm-hmm. other stuff, but Max is definitely a fascinating fellow, and I absolutely believe that it was beneficial to him.
That might be an interesting show topic, have him come on and talk about ayahuasca.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I like Max Egan as well. I found him very, very interesting.
Yeah, see, Max, though, I would probably want to try the... Which, by the way, was another thing suggested to me that, well, if that works, you ought to... Yeah, I don't know. Look, I'm not jumping for the next thing.
right.
Although, I mean, I would try it, and I never have. That's one of the very few things that is a hallucinogen that I probably have not attempted to try at some point.
I don't think it's very easy to get in this country, is it?
You know what? I don't know. I know there's a couple of places where, like, you know, due to the status of Native people as a religious organization, they can do it.
Right.
And I have a friend who has offered to put me in touch with somebody, and it would cost me so many hundreds of dollars to go and sit at the reservation there, and they take care of you for, like, the weekend. And I've thought about that. Yeah. But then again, that might not even be necessary. I really feel as... I'm not looking to get high, honestly. As strange as that sounds, I'm not all that interested in being high. You know what? Even when I got hooked on opiates, all I was interested in was being functional, brother.
Right.
That,
you know, I know what you mean.
That's all. And like, not to say that I can't enjoy getting high. I can, but it's frankly not a motivating factor for me. I don't care about it. I want to be as functional as I can be, is all.
And these types of experiences, I mean, and I've talked to more than a handful of people that have gone through them, and the one thing that strikes me as the most interesting is, you know, even the people that, you know, that they definitely get benefit out of it, but you can tell it's not like it was something that, when I hear it, it's like, yeah, well, I mean, I'm glad it's available and it is so effective. But it doesn't sound like a fun experience while you're going through it, is what I'm trying to say, versus, you know, getting a little tipsy, you know, where you're feeling lighter and you're having some fun and that sort of thing. This doesn't sound like that's the type of experience that these things bring to you. So it would almost be strange thinking, why would you want to do it recreationally?
Well,
is what I'm getting at.
But here's the thing also, and just disclosure, but limited.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there were some portions of it that were pleasurable.
Oh, sure.
Because, again, yeah, heightened sensitivity and stuff like that. I'll leave it at that. But
that's fine. But no, I know what you're saying. And I was actually going to say that I'm sure there were parts of it that were pleasing. But overall, you know, whether it's just in most cases, it seems like it's very self-revelatory. So, mm-hmm. you know, even if you're not you don't have specific known traumas to work on, I would think, you know, going into it with the right, you know, with the mindset to learn more about yourself. But I don't know that it would necessarily be pleasurable while going through it, mm-hmm. versus other types of drugs that are. You know, the experience of the drug itself is pleasurable, but this doesn't sound that way.
Right, like full and total disclosure. Look,
I'm not digging, I swear.
No, but full and total disclosure is that, frankly, opiates of any type are pleasurable to my mind. Mm-hmm. They are. they are also effective painkillers, but they are literally a pleasurable thing. Addiction's not pleasurable, but you know, honestly, yeah, they are. That you know, if I wanted to just be high and feel good, you know, cheapest best way would probably be heroin, and that's something else. You know, cannabis can be enjoyable at a certain level, but again. Not really the things, and alcohol can be fun at a certain level.
Yeah.
You know, and I've done all of it to different extremes and not. You know, it's just a matter of, cocaine is kind of crappy, I think. But
I've never done it. I've had a couple of opportunities, but I've always passed it up.
Well, I can see why people get addicted to... Sorry, what's that?
Years ago, my house was clean in under an hour. Years ago,
Yeah, and honestly, the reason why I've always passed it up is because of, again, being, I mean, I grew up around a lot of this stuff. A lot of this stuff I didn't do, but I grew up around it. So, but knowing what cocaine, how it can enhance you, giving you the energy, keeping you awake, knowing my own personality, I was always afraid I would like it too much. So I purposefully stayed away from it for fear of enjoying it.
Well, then, if that's the case, never, ever, even if you do at some point attempt that, don't smoke crack. Because
no, I wouldn't. Yeah,
it's a profoundly faster hit to the head, and it's at a level of obnoxiousness that you know. And the other thing is, being around people that were habitual cocaine users also turned me off to it, because it just absolutely, you know, the old Bill Cosby bit, right? Where he says, oh, well, cocaine, it just amplifies your personality. And Bill Cosby says, well, what if you're an asshole?
yeah.
You know, true. This is what happens. It will amplify good and bad parts, you know?
Right.
So, just saying, you can turn up the amplifier on the guitar all you want, but if you play the wrong note, it still sucks.
It's still going to suck. Yeah, you got it.
You know,
no, I was always, just because the ability to stay up at just such long stretches and be able to have the energy was always so appealing that I was always nope, not going to go anywhere near it. I refuse.
Yeah, I mean, you know, again, anything can do damage to you, and I don't suggest any of it. I'm just saying that, this is not something that. I mean, I can see how somebody could enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And who knows? Maybe if I was a totally healthy, mentally or physically person, maybe I'd enjoy it. I don't know.
Who knows? Yeah.
But I know what happens to me. So, you know, it's again, not. I'm not suggesting this is a home game. I'm just pointing out.
No. Don't try this at home, kids.
No, but what it really showed me is that, quite frankly, after going through the pharmaceutical stuff, after trying to, as the overused term, self-medicating, I tried to self-medicate a bunch of different ways.
Sure.
You know, tried to follow doctors' advice is, you know, various advices. Ultimately, it got me almost nowhere. And a lot of people get to that point where you think you're beyond any sort of help. And something that is, although, you know, there is a prohibition against it, it is a natural thing. You know, provided an experience where, in the moment, I certainly felt like, I lost control a little bit of myself. Mm-hmm. But by reassessing, rearranging my own thoughts and emotions after a little bit, I gained so much more clarity.
I'm sure.
In each moment. And, you know, certain things came to me. You know, I'll tell you one of the most profound questions I answered for myself. Mm-hmm. And I won't say who, and I won't get into specifics, but here's a general question that I have carried around with me for many, many years. You ask at a certain point yourself, if you've been through certain things with certain people, you might say, you know, I do wonder why this person didn't just kill me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why they couldn't just do that. And frankly, I got to a place where there's a certain person that I feel like, you know what, it would have been so much more mercy. And just would have made more sense all the way around, would have been easier on them, easier on me. Why didn't they just end my life?
Mm-hmm.
I came to a realization during this that that's exactly what the problem is, that it would have been an act of mercy.
Ah, gotcha. Yep.
And not to make my complaint any bigger, it's just that, mm-hmm. Well, now that actually makes sense to me.
Yeah, you know, that actually does make sense.
I was able to make sense of a bunch of things like that, where, you know, it's like, why did this, why? You ask a lot of whys when other people choose to inflict damage upon you. And you don't feel, you know, at a certain level, you go, well, I deserved it. This is the way it is. I have spent the majority of my life, it's going to sound ridiculous, but this is a true statement, feeling as though, you know, I actually deserve most of what has been visited upon me because I'm just a piece of garbage. And, you know, so of course, what do you do with garbage? You don't really care what you do with garbage. So of course, this makes sense. And I can't say that I've completely abandoned that thought when it comes to some of this stuff. But I was able to reason through some of that. And again, I don't think I'm entirely done, but...
No, I think there's still... I think there's still benefit that you can get out of this.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, is I came to an understanding at a certain point that, you know, it wasn't about deserve. It wasn't about, you know, and I know this sounds like a bunch of psychobabble, but it...
No, it's not. It's not.
It's... There is a core thing here where, yeah, you're going to have to reason through why did this... Everybody asks when something bad happens. Yeah. Why did this happen to me? Why did this happen to the person I cared about? Why did this person die? Why did I have to go through this? A lot of people ask that why? And my answer was, you know, God hates me and... And I'm just, this is what I deserve because I'm not worth anything else. I had to reason that way in order to make sense of certain things at a certain point in time, but this allowed me to go in and realize that, you know, not just realize, but really grasp the idea that, you know, what I encountered wasn't necessarily about me.
Right.
That it wasn't a value judgment on me. That, you know, in some cases, I mean, there were value judgments on me, but in some cases there were no value judgments. This is just the way of things. It depersonalized for me a lot of, like, honestly what I felt, which is that, you know, well, yeah, of course. That this is what you get. You know why? Because you're you. No, right. In some cases, this is what you get because you just happen to be there.
You're in the wrong place at the wrong time. Yeah.
You know, and that might sound really basic and stupid, but I really couldn't wrap my mind around it until I was able to get a bit of the control of my mind during this.
No, it doesn't sound basic or stupid at all. I think it's just a natural human tendency. When you're treated badly for so long, the natural inclination is to think, well, just what you said. Well, they must be treating me this way because it's, you know, it's my fault. And you know, especially when this is happening to you as a child, it's, you know, then you internalize it, and of course you're going to carry it with you. It's just, you know, it's amazing at how, you know, how a mushroom can actually work to fix all this stuff, to fix this, you know, the trauma of the past, and start to set things in a more, you know, a healthier direction for you.
And, you know, again, make no mistake, there was things I was confronting not just from my childhood, but a lot you know, dark situations, and I would... You know, I struggle to call it this, but I guess I have no choice. Sort of psychic scars that that I've earned one way or another throughout the course of my life. Some of them are a lot easier to live with than others. You know, but it doesn't mean there's not a scar, you know.
Sure.
So all of that, and... you know, again, as I said, I mean, you know, you, I'm sure that there were profound things that were occurring during all this mm-hmm. that I'm now missing because I'm not explaining them, you know, from a real super fresh perspective, and I've had to integrate a lot of this stuff now.
Right, right.
Which is another process. Again, like I said, the painful parts and the positive, got to adjust. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, in the aftermath, for a couple of days afterwards, I was probably a little odd. I wasn't quite myself, and I was probably lost in thought a lot.
Sure.
Because I was processing all this. Would you agree with that, hon?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, is there anything you want to? Is there anything you want to add? Yeah. Sorry.
Well, the first time you did it, you kept asking me if I would still be around if it completely changed you, which, you know, of course, you know, I would be. But the first time that you did it, and then the next day after you had woken up, you were kind of like wandering around a little bit, like, I don't want to say in a trance, but kind of just here, but not here. I thought, oh God, you know,
did I give him the wrong answer?
I thought, you know, what happened?
Sure.
And, you know, fortunately, we see, you know, that it's done a lot of repairs. But I wanted to add something to something you said a little bit ago about the opium and the heroin, how it feels right. And, you know, as we've discussed, that also has a lot to do with you being born addicted to it, that it, yeah, it's part of your makeup.
Yeah. And that's, you know, it's a lot of what, you know, what I was saying, just, you know, exposures, you know, what the developing fetus, yeah, is exposed to. Yeah. It makes perfect sense. So, yeah, it probably would give you a comforting feeling that mm-hmm. others wouldn't get.
Yeah. Normalizes things.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. And then one other thing, and then I think I'm done, is I'm an advocate for quality of life, not quantity.
Yeah. You and me
now,
both.
Yeah. If he continues to take these and it shortens his life 5 years, you know what? That, to me, is okay. Because yeah, I would rather him live 5 years less
and be happy,
but enjoy yeah, the time that he has left, than live another extra 5 or 10 years in absolute misery.
Sure.
Because who the hell wants to do that? And that's with anything.
I agree.
Even if somebody is prescribed pain pills and it gets them up every day and they can enjoy their family or their children or whatever hobbies they like.
Yeah.
If it shortens their life a few years because they're not good for you or whatever, I don't see the problem.
No, I don't either. I don't either.
No,
and most reasonable practitioners wouldn't see the problem in that either.
No, see that, and the other thing is, look, the adjustment that I'm talking about, and that question when I asked you, yeah, would you still be around? Because I saw a possibility of profound change. Even, you know, the first couple of times I didn't get to it, but I could see it was there.
Right.
Once I got the right, you know, first of all, this is experimental, so dosage was wrong to start with. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, quite frankly, the second or third time, I think I actually went a little too far, maybe. But I got it down to, no, now this makes sense. And, but the first time definitely was not enough to get, you know, anywhere really. And either the second or third time might have been a little much. But it was an adjustment. And that is something that I had to consider there, is that honestly, I knew that this was going to alter my behavior. Because there's stuff that I don't know how to describe that are emotional and mental possibilities, some of which I forgot that I had access to at one point, honestly. Mm-hmm. Some of which I don't know that I ever had the ability to do certain things. you know, like I said, that pain reaction to instant rage has been part of my personality. Like, I don't remember a time when it wasn't.
Right.
And it's messed up. I stubbed my toe or something, and I've got to, like, take a few minutes worth of effort not to punch holes in the wall.
Right, right.
Not to throw things. You know, if somebody steps on my foot, I have to, like, literally grab onto myself in order not to strike them immediately. Right. You know, stuff like this. It's very, but, you know, again, spoiler for after, you know, the aftermath of it all, is that, you know, that's not an automatic anymore. Right. That changed. So, you know, when you got base level stuff like that changing, it's clearly going to alter. I know my personality's altered. Frankly, I've got a lot. I got a lot of different thoughts and feelings that I just simply did not have a few months ago. Mm-hmm. And I've got a way of navigating through life that is different now. And each time I did something during these experiences, it has changed things. And I had to adjust every single time. It's like, let me get used to this now.
Yeah.
And so that's gone on during the process as well. So I think I've pretty much nailed all of the experience, unless you have some other questions here. Now we're almost 2.5 hours deep.
Yeah. No, I don't have any I don't have any more questions. No, it was very, very interesting listening to all that. It's just, you know, like, just like Kim said, just from the scientific side of it, it's fascinating.
Well, and I'm obviously offering an anecdote here again.
Of course.
That
of course.
Is my own personal experience, and to me what it indicates is that there are possibilities, not just with this substance, but, you know, perhaps there are other less than conventional means by which maybe people don't have to suffer, is all mm-hmm. I'm saying. And I really want to drive that point home, that's what it is. I mean, look, I don't object to somebody if they say, look, I got my Effexor prescription, and that does... Look, man, if that's working for you, great, okay?
Whatever gets you through the night.
I don't like it because I don't like the drug companies making you into repeat customers and so on and so
right.
forth. But you know what? End of the day, you got to do what you can to make your life livable.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think anybody has a right to take that away from you, so long as you're not hurting anybody else. If you're able to make your life more livable and it requires a substance, a therapeutic behavior, if taking yoga is your thing, you know, I don't care. Whatever it is, you should, mm-hmm. you know, figure it out and access what will help you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't believe for a second, just like Kim had said, that the government or the drug companies or the large corporations have a right to tell you this is good, this is bad.
No, they don't.
Especially when it comes to things which are natural. And this is, you can't dispute, it is a natural occurrence.
No.
It is.
Absolutely.
You know, something that does have an effect on the brain, on the mind. And if it is a valid tool to get some people some healing, I mean, even as we speak, Captain Trips, the yeah. Pentagon is going to put some money into this.
I did hear that.
And, you know, just looking at it from that very basic point of view, all of the individuals who have served in uniform, who have clearly been damaged by that experience, you know, again, not making any arguments, here's the thing, they exist. And... if they can get some help, if eating dirt out of the driveway will help you, then, you know, damn it, you should be allowed to eat dirt out of the driveway. Okay,
yeah.
Whatever it is, if it helps more than it hurts, you know, then this is what should be. I mean, there's this whole oath. You know, the Hippocratic Oath, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hippocrates, about... Well, what are you supposed to do? It's not all about pain, by the way, but it is about helping people. And it is about...
And it's, at the very least, don't hurt them.
Right. Right. Now, there are calculations here. You know, as Kim was saying, you know, and here's the thing. If somebody can have a quality of life and somehow, yeah, that does deteriorate their health a little quicker, but they don't have their extended health so that they're just hurting the whole time, well, there's a value judgment there.
Of course. There always is, yeah.
You know, there always is. If this is the kind of thing that screws me up, you know, some years from now, so be it. This time where I'm feeling better
is
so much more worth it than, you know, and I think that's about where I come down on this as far as the experience goes. And there's a whole lot more to it that I did not describe. Not because I'm trying to hide anything, but because, you know, if we were to be at the details of 10 different trips here, you know, how many episodes you want? I think the one is good. Maybe we follow up at some point with something else, but I think the description of the results is the last logical step. And I want to thank you for doing that with me, Captain Trips.
It's been an honor. It's been my pleasure.
And of course, Mrs. O, I appreciate your input. And I know this has been an odd experience. And if somebody told you, I don't know, 10 years ago, that you might be sitting with somebody like me while I'm taking mushrooms and going into another world, I don't know if you would say that they were telling you a true story about your future. Probably not, huh?
No, if you told me you were going to be living in Georgia either, I wouldn't believe that either. But, you know. No, good.
There you go.
If you think about where we were 10 years ago and where we're at now, I mean, some of this stuff, I'd love to go back and tell myself, hey, Donald Trump would have been president for 4 years.
Yeah.
And now we have a man who we're not sure is alive who's president. I mean, come on.
Right. I think they're propping him up on Trump.
Yeah, Biden will become president, but after Trump. And then the next question that the other self of yours needs to ask you is, can I buy weed from you? Because
exactly.
You are clearly
are you selling
high.
What you're taking?
And it's some good stuff. You know, just saying. It is part of the reality. So, no, do appreciate you guys for doing this with me and all you guys for listening. Meanwhile, I am going to release this if you're hearing it live. I'm going to release all three of these together. Okay. So those of you that heard it live, you heard it first. But everybody's going to get a shot at all three of these podcasts when I put them out together. Sometime in the next few weeks, I hope. Okay.
Cool.
Anyway.
Yeah, we'll get that third episode in. Don't worry about it.
Fair enough. But meanwhile, again, thanks to everybody. Not sure if Mike Swanson really wants to sponsor this, but he is anyway. So we'll find out how Mike feels afterwards.
Is he going to the Megadeth concert in the on the farm?
Oh, if I was going to visit him, he would. I'll tell you that, because I'd be like, come on, Mike, I just got to have pictures of you at the Megadeth show.
He doesn't live that far from me.
No,
it'd be worth the drive.
You got it.